AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Resurge, Helena's low-dust humic granule that improves nutrient uptake and plant growth. Energize your soil and elevate your crops with Resurge. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. The holiday season has officially begun, and that means my schedule is not really my schedule for the next month, maybe even month and a half, but I've still got a hold of it for today, and that means it's time to talk exports and for a dose of Doggett, too.
Live from Thanksgiving Day in the USA via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Greg Anderson, National Biodiesel Board, and Brad Doyle from the American Soybean Association. Then we've got Nick Giordano from the National Pork Producers Council. And later, John Doggett, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association. Wow. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy. Woo! How you doing?
Super great. Super great, good. Brother.
What a lineup.
Super great. Yeah.
What a
yeah.
lineup.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Well, and we've got quite the lineup throughout this sort of holiday reprieve.
Right.
You know, there's and we can talk about that just a little bit later on in the segment here as mm-hmm. as preview. But you've spoken with lots of really, really smart, good, enthusiastic folks yep. in preparation for this event.
Yeah, absolutely. Last week, made my way down to the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention down in Kansas City, and they do a thing called Trade Talk, and it gives broadcasters an opportunity to get caught up with some of the latest, greatest things that are happening out there. It gives us an opportunity to have a conversation with the commodity groups, organizations, and just kind of pick their brains, what they're really thinking about, what's really driving their policy decisions and their efforts, their promotions, market development efforts for the year ahead. So it's a great opportunity to gather a lot of intelligence in a short period of time.
Well, and you made very good use of that time. I'm proud of you, buddy. Good work.
Well, thanks, man.
Good work. I'm looking forward to these shows. I don't know with the news. Can we just not? With the news, I've got something
we can
else.
Just
here.
Not with the news. You got something, anything else to fill the time?
Something. I've got an important thing to do here. Are you okay. with me? Okay. Let
All
me start
the way.
Here. Yep. President John F. Kennedy. He was the first American president to spare a turkey's life in 1963, saying, "Quote: okay. We'll let this one grow." The annual White House tradition of pardoning a turkey officially started with George H.W. Bush in 1989. When President Bush may have said, "Wouldn't be prudent to eat this one, not gonna do it." And so, taking that presidential example, on this, the 25th day of November 2021, I, handsome newsman Davis Michelson, in concert with the entire news staff, the AgriTalk men of brass, Chip Lorre, producer Big Apple Joe, and not necessarily Farm Journal broadcast or our sponsors, in the spirit of goodwill and Thanksgiving, do hereby benevolently and graciously declare AgriTurkey officially pardoned.
Safe for another year.
Safe for another year. Oh, wait. Wait, hold on. What's that, AgriTurkey? You what? You realize what you're saying. Well, Chip AgriTurkey says he doesn't want to be pardoned. Is that, am
oh
I hearing
God.
You right? Have I got that right? Yeah, he says his purpose in life is to feed some family for a holiday meal, and he doesn't want to us to rob him of that privilege. This
wow.
is unprecedented. Well,
not really.
I guess rather than pardoning AgriTurkey, we're going to eat him.
We're going to eat him.
I'm actually Yay! Closer to sending him to a psychologist. There's something not right about that bird. I guess we're going to eat old AgriTurkey. You're sure now? He says he's sure. Well, That settles it.
Wow.
I'm sending the men of brass home, and we'll get...
Well, there's going to be plenty to eat. Maybe they should stick around.
You know, there's something not right about him, though. Like, you know how I always say, don't stick your hand in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Around harvest time, I caught him sticking his wing places where he shouldn't have been, you know, just taunting the fates. The other day, he was over there smoking by the diesel tank. I don't know. Bird's got a death wish, and now I don't know if I want to eat him or not.
Well, you know, he knows his role.
He does. He gets
it. And the important thing is he's going to get to know another role while I'm sopping up the gravy.
I've bought mini buttered croissants for just to be extra fancy for my holiday meal. Well, all right. I guess we're having turkey after all. Big Apple Joe.
You know it.
Take this bird behind the woodshed, would you, real quick?
Yeah. Hey, have you met any pumpkins that are willing to make the same sort of sacrifice going forward?
Yes, they've sacrificed themselves quite a bit ago. They've actually placed themselves into tin cans, which is very convenient. You know, you pop the lid off, you make the pie, you forget about it. Yeah.
What's the favorite side?
You know, this one is kind of weird, but I like coleslaw with cranberries in it. Coleslaw with dried cranberries in it.
Really? And that's one of your traditional Thanksgiving sides?
Well, it's going to be this year. I'm trying it. We'll see how it goes.
We're going to see if we can make a new tradition.
That's
just
right.
Pop one up out of nowhere.
It might take.
I don't think that's how traditions happen. Or is it?
Or is it? Or is it?
Wow. I like it. I like the plan. That's gutsy.
Hey, yeah. Moving on. In the spirit of Thanksgiving, I just wanted to give you a moment. I know that you love being a farm broadcaster.
Yes.
You're just back from the Farm Broadcasters Association meeting down there. I'm sure you're all fired up. Would you just take a moment and sort of reflect on what it means to you to be a farm broadcaster? What does that mean for you?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what it means to me is kind of fulfilling that dream that I had when I was a young, impressionable 4-H-er in my early teens.
Mm-hmm.
When I started getting into communications and understanding and witnessing, thanks to the senior Michelson, witnessing just how powerful the communications business can be. It had so much impact on me at that time that it's something that I decided to pursue. And thankfully, Davis, the fine people out there allow us to jump into their headspace a couple of times a day during the week and provide what I hope is a valuable service for them all.
See, now that's interesting because I actually, and this is a true story, I was going through some old school papers, big box of old school papers and things, and I found a theme that I had written from, I think it was 9th or 10th grade, about what I would want to do for a career. And I had written that I wanted to be a writer and do some broadcasting as well.
Wow.
Now, your reasons are a whole lot more. I don't know. And I had, honestly, I'd forgotten about it. And I'm pretty sure knowing my 14, 15-year-old self just thought writing something like that would probably get chicks type of deal. So my motivation is not.
How'd that work out?
It worked out just fine. Just fine, brother. Hey. Okay. But I share your sentiments. I mean, we both feel the weight of responsibility and at the same time the joy of being. I mean, we get up in the morning and we get to do our favorite thing every single day, so I dare I say we're thankful for our jobs on this Thanksgiving Day.
We absolutely are thankful, 100% thankful. Davis, good work there, buddy, and you know, hats off to the AgriTalk Turkey, or should I say, hats off. AgriTalk Turkey. Stay tuned, everybody. We've got a great show coming your way. Greg Anderson from the National Biodiesel Board is next, right here on AgriTalk.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Hey, let's jump right into the conversation and talk about some market development.
All right. As far as I'm concerned, I'm down here at Trade Talk at the NAFB convention in KC, and everybody talks about how excited they are about the future and how excited they are that this is happening and that is happening. But they're all coming in second place, I'll bet, to this guy, Greg Anderson, National Biodiesel Board, producer in eastern Nebraska. And, Greg, you and I have been having conversations for several years. Dude, it's happening.
It's happening, Chip. Demand for biodiesel, renewable diesel, is just off the charts. It's just great. And we're seeing, for the first time, 2020, we exceeded 3 billion gallons production. That's going to be a small number here in a few years because we're just seeing it grow and grow and grow. You know, NBB has set out a goal of 6 billion by 2030. We're going to surpass it before then. And with renewable diesel coming on, with the new crushing plants being built, with crush expansion being built, that sends a signal as those companies are partnering with companies that they've never partnered with before. Yeah. To see the value that ag products bring now to this exciting dimension of new energy is just phenomenal. So yeah. As a soybean farmer, the soybean oil has always been the flagship feedstock for these things, and it'll continue to be so. But look at where we're including corn oil, beef tallow, other animal fats, waste oils, canola. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and new technologies will bring new feedstocks that we're not even aware of right now in the future. So,
okay, we're talking about demand there, and that's awesome. Talk directly to the consumer out there right now that is buying products that are delivered with diesel trucks,
right,
that are burning that renewable diesel. Tell those consumers what they're getting.
Well, they're getting their goods and services delivered in a expedient manner using the most clean fuel that's available on the planet right now. And what's really driving the demand that we just talked about a few moments ago is the carbon reduction policies that are being implemented and being looked at all up and down the value chain and all among the goods and services. I got to tell you, Chip, about Maersk, who's the largest shipping company in the world.
Yep.
They have an aggressive carbon reduction goal of 50% by the year 2030, so that's only less than 10 years away. And the number one product on their list to accomplish that is biodiesel, which they, in years previous, have never burned before in their ships, ocean-going vessels. Isn't that exciting? And think about the billions of gallons that that uses. So, yeah, we're here to stay, and we're here to stay in a big way, and agriculture is going to benefit from this.
Yeah. So I'm one of the guys that'll stand off in the corner and say, yeah, but. Okay, so we've got the renewable diesel and the low carbon fuel standards on the West Coast and creeping into some of the other states. Mm-hmm. We've got that home heating oil project up in the Northeast that you have told us about over the years. That's a fantastic success story up there. We've got the renewable diesel coming on. We've got sustainable aviation fuel and now the marine fuel. That guy that's standing over in the corner makes me want to go, can we handle all this?
It's going to take a tremendous amount of feedstocks. There's no doubt about that. But think about this. We're adding crushing capacity for soy. Just pull that out. So that means that exports, as valuable as they will continue to be, we're going to crush more beans here domestically. We're going to capture that oil. We're going to put it towards renewables. We're going to use that extra meal that we produce to grow our domestic livestock industry with cheaper feed costs because we're making more soybean meal. And maybe what we're going to start seeing more is shipping those value-added beef cuts and pork chops across the pond more than ever before and providing then economic benefit back to our rural Americas. Biodiesel alone provides currently today 65,000 jobs, and most of those are in rural communities. And so what that's going to just do is build our economy, and agriculture has always been the backbone of our economy. It's always been the proud thing that we can put there that's exporting, has a surplus of dollars that we're exporting. So, you know, I feel good. This is great for farmers, and there's going to be a lot of, but what about this? But what about that? But, you know, the biodiesel.
Those are hurdles to overcome.
Those are hurdles, and yeah. Actually they're opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, you look at it that way. And biodiesel, ethanol, all the renewable fuels have always faced headwinds, and we've always prevailed. And it's going to be that way here, too. So as a farmer, it's a good time to be in the soybean business. Soybean business is a good business to be in, and we can attribute a lot of that to biodiesel and renewable diesel.
Amen to that, Greg. Good work, man.
Well, thank you, Chip. Thank you for telling the story and for being a champion from the communication side on this. And as an agriculture, it's just great to have flagship people like you telling this story. So great to work with you.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that. That's Greg Anderson, farmer there in eastern Nebraska. Can I tell him? Bean on bean on bean, full-time bean grower?
You can say that now for 30 years. So I've been doing that for a long time. I'm first to say that it doesn't work for everybody, but it's been good to me.
I think it's probably going to be good for you for a while longer.
I hope so.
Greg Anderson, NBV.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, renewable diesel is going to change the demand profile for soybeans, and that's something that has got the guys at the American Soybean Association excited.
Joining us now is Brad Doyle. He is the vice president of the American Soybean Association. Brad, I tell you what, it has been a dynamic year in all of agriculture. But when we talk about soybeans and their potential use going forward, this has been one of those transition years where we better have our eyes wide open going into the future with renewable diesel, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. You know, in the past, soybean prices have always been driven by the soybean meal.
Yes.
And it's always been a great market for us, still is today. But you're right, the oil demand in the fuel sector has exploded to the point where we have a lot of folks asking if they're going to be able to get oil in the future.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's a great product. We know how well the oil burns in diesel engines. It's a renewable source, and right now high demand. We've been fighting for that for a long time, so we're just reaping the rewards there.
You know, when I go out and I've done marketing seminars and talk about the outlook for soybeans, I've always said, listen, just find me another 350, 400 million bushels in demand that will consistently be there year to year, and it will change everybody's lives when it comes to soybeans. This has got that potential, Brad.
Absolutely. So as farmers, through the years, we travel to throughout the U.S. visiting with industry. New uses, that's a big part of our checkoff, is to create those products, that demand that drives the price up, drives hopefully the profit up on the farm. So that's why we do that as farmers, but also our international customers.
Yeah.
Build, you know, it takes years to build those customer relationships, and they are always there looking for that next big product. Oil, biodiesel, renewable diesel, you have many options, and that's the great thing about soybeans.
Yeah. But the bottom line is, it's hog feed, it's chicken feed, and that's a big component when we talk about those international customers. China right at the top of the list. How's the relationship there?
So right now, I believe we're in great shape. You know, anytime that we visit with our Chinese buyers and customers, they are still in. They're in with us. We are offset by our season, so there are times of the year they are going to go further south and into South America to look for opportunity. They're not storing a lot, so a lot of it's just in time.
Right.
And we've got them on quality and the actual nutritional value, so we'll always have that factor. You know, as long as we have a healthy, growing world economy with people that eat every day, they love animal protein, and your point about the hog production and poultry production, we can go even into aquaculture and other markets. So just keeping them educated on why we are better.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've noticed from ACA and or ASA and the other commodity groups is a joining of forces in the messaging that's going out there. You're a huge supporter of the livestock industry here in the States, right?
Absolutely. So I farm in Arkansas, and yeah. we are a large poultry poultry state. So we hand in hand. You know, a lot of the farmers that grow soybeans don't really interact with our poultry or livestock customers. So yes, that's why we love to work with them. We are always looking for their projections. Yeah. You know, are we going up? Is their demand? As long as their demand's healthy, our demand will always be healthy.
Absolutely. Brad, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Brad Doyle, Vice President, American Soybean Association.
We're talking pork trade with NPPC next on AgriTalk.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you are there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update. Markets are closed today for Thanksgiving. Grain and livestock markets will reopen at 8:30 Central Time Friday morning for an abbreviated trading session. USDA will release export sales data for the week ended November 18th on Friday ahead of the market's reopening. Traders will look to that data for some price direction, especially Chinese purchases over the past week. Traders' other focus will be on South American weather. Brazil is off to a strong start to the growing season, though there is some dryness in far southern areas. Argentina's weather has been less favorable, though not overly concerning. The country is expected to get some near-term rains, but moisture needs are increasing with rising temps, and the extended forecast indicates a drier trend through January. Wheat traders will continue to watch weather in Australia. Heavy late season rains are causing quality concerns with the Australian wheat crop. While there will be plenty of production, more of the crop than normal will be feed quality. That adds to concerns about tight global milling quality supplies. The other focal point for grain and soy traders will be outside markets, including the U.S. dollar, crude oil futures, and the inflationary environment. Focus in the cattle market will remain on surging cash cattle prices amid tightening market-ready supplies. Packers raised cash cattle prices again this week in their pursuit of supplies. After buying a lot of cattle the past 4 weeks, there are questions about whether the cash market is due for a pause. The hog market will focus on the falling cash and product prices. Seasonal pressure normally persists into winter, but price action in deferred lean hog futures suggests traders may be expecting an early seasonal low. For Markets Now, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady wishing you a happy Thanksgiving.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, on this Thanksgiving 2021. Hey, let's jump into a conversation right now about pork trade.
One of my favorites, and I get to see him face to face, Nick Giordano from the National Pork Producers Council. Nick, it is great to see you.
Chip, thanks so much for having me.
All right, let's talk trade. And China is one part of the story, and it's a major part of the story. Our exports are down to China this year, but our exports are holding right in there on total. This is a fantastic success story, isn't it?
Well, it is, and we've gone through this pandemic, and our exports have been strong. As you point out, we're down in China, but our value is up year on year, close to 10%. Our volume is up, not as much, but our volume is up. That's really positive. China's obviously very important, but in any given year, we export to over 100 countries. Japan, Mexico, Canada, South Korea, Australia, Colombia, the Philippines, just to name some of our really big important markets. I mean, we're, last year, I started in 1995, I left private legal practice, came to MPPC, and coincidentally, that was the year we crossed over from being a net importer to a net exporter.
Right.
And now, we've been over $7 billion. We keep growing. And because of that, and so it's a real success. Now, we have no ongoing trade agreements being negotiated. MPPC was in the middle of the TPP. And it's really disheartening to see that the deal that MPPC works so closely with the United States government on is being enjoyed by our competitors, because that pork deal was driven by us and the U.S. government, and it was a great deal, and our CPTPP competitors have that deal, and the European Union basically got the same deal in access to these countries, whether Vietnam or elsewhere. So, our top priority is to get back in the trade game. And obviously in China, we want to get out from under these punitive tariffs. So while China has been a good market for us, largely because of African swine fever, it's created opportunities, we're at a tariff disadvantage.
Yeah.
So most countries' products are being assessed a tariff of 8%. We're at 33%. And that's because we've been caught up in the trade war. At one point, we're at 70%. So it's really amazing that we've been able to sell so much to China. We're doing it with one hand tied behind our back. We're not recouping as much value. So obviously, it's a big priority for us. Was in the Trump administration, continues to be in the Biden administration, to get these punitive tariffs off, to, we're like an innocent bystander in this trade war. So we want to get beyond that. We want to see the U.S. go back into CPTPP. I can make a case that the pork industry is more prejudiced than any sector of the economy from the U.S. pulling out of TPP. We got to get the Indo-Pacific region is the fastest growing economic region in the world. Delighted that the cabinet officials and high-ranking officials are over in Asia now as we talk. That's good. But we'd like to see a real trade deal come of this. That's what we want.
Okay. Vietnam, they just made some changes on their tariffs. How big of a potential market is that for U.S. pork?
I think we did about 54 million there last year, which, is not a drop in the bucket.
Right.
But when you consider that they consume more pork in Vietnam than they do in Mexico, right? And Mexico is well over $1 billion market.
Idea.
Yeah, so, right. It is, when you look at the Asian nations, in terms of potential, and this is pure economic terms, no geopolitics, okay? China, number one, Japan, then Vietnam,
okay.
Right? So this is, it's important, and MPPC worked, look, when the U.S. got out of TPP and the free, and in the Trump administration, that administration and this administration, we've been pushing hard on a number of bilateral negotiations focused on pork. Philippines, where we've gotten more access, big success story for MPPC, and now Vietnam. It's good. So on July 1, the tariff that is assessed on U.S. pork is going to go down from 15% to 10%. That's good. We appreciate what the administration's done. when Vice President Harris was there, this was the top of their trade list. So that's good. They're listening to us. It's positive. It's going to allow us to sell more pork. But here's the rub. Our competitors in CPTPP, and Vietnam is a CPTPP country, right? But our competitors selling pork, whether Canada or Mexico or so on, and the European Union that got the same TPP-type deal in Vietnam, they're already at 7.5%. So we're going from 15 to 10. They're already at 7.5, and every year they scale down until they get to zero.
Right.
So the United States has got to get back into TPP. It's okay. Really big for the pork industry. So, look, I this is positive. We pushed for this. We wanted this. This will create more opportunities. But the end game, the thing we really have to have, is the U.S. back in CPTPP. I mean, the Indo-Pacific is the fastest growing economic region in the world. It's massive. We got to get back in.
Okay. All right. Very good. I got two more countries to ask you about. Just want to do a status check on Mexico. How's the relationship?
The relationship, as far as the pork industry is concerned, is very good. Now, there are other ag issues with Mexico. And in fact, the three North American leaders are meeting, and Canada and Mexico are going to raise concerns about some of the provisions in this reconciliation package that Democrats are working on. I'd say the relationship between the three countries is good. I think Canada and Mexico have concerns not related to the pork industry. And we got enough problems. We want to just, hopefully, it seems like we're always a candidate for retaliation. And we still have those punitive 25% tariffs on our product going into China as a casualty of the trade war. At one point, we had punitive tariffs going in on Mexico. That was our number one hair on fire issue. And thank goodness, right? So the steel and aluminum tariffs, you just heard that they came off on Europe. Well, we got them off in North America a couple years ago. That was a big deal to us. The other big deal was when President Trump pulled the United States out of TPP. I got on a plane in January 2016 and I went to Japan.
Right.
And MPPC's number one objective then became a trade deal with Japan, which the Trump administration listened. So kudos to, the White House, Bob Lighthizer, and so on. This was really, other sectors of agriculture too, but so important to the pork industry. Japan had been our top value export market year in and year out. Now, China lately has been, but it's really, for years, it's been Japan, and we were starting to lose sales there. So that was huge. Okay. But bottom line is, you look at the Indo-Pacific region, and U.S. has got to be in there, and it's critically important for hog farmers. So MPPC is going to continue to talk to everybody about this because it's so important to our stakeholders.
Absolutely. Okay. How important is it to get a trade deal with the UK?
I think it's important. I will tell you that I pitched the administration when we pulled out of TPP and they wanted to renegotiate the NAFTA on broadening that to include Japan and the United Kingdom. Now, that didn't work. And I also pitched TPP as, okay, we can fix this. I get that there are rules of origin and other issues you want to fix in TPP. And we can make TPP kind of the new WTO because we got so many issues in the WTO. But what do I know, right? I'm just a pork guy. So, we're all about trade because it's so important to our stakeholders. Sure, we would welcome negotiations with the United Kingdom as long as the final deal on pork looks like our other free trade agreements.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, these guys got to figure out, do they still have one foot in Europe and are they still going to basically be protectionists and hide behind all this, European gibbledygook, right, that isn't based on science and it's just really protectionism. Is that where they're going to be? Because if that's where they're going to be, we don't want an FDA with them, and I don't think our colleagues in most other sectors of ag want an FDA with them. But if it's going to look like the U.S.'s other free trade agreements, then sure, absolutely. We'd be delighted to have a free trade agreement with the United Kingdom. But I got to tell you, the priority is the Indo-Pacific. Why? Sure. It's the fastest growing region in the world. We got to, and we're, the United States is prejudiced by not being part of CPTPP. We got to get back, and we got to get back in a way where we're driving the bus, and we can do that. We're the United States of America. We got to do that, and NPPC is going to continue to push for that.
Fantastic, Nick. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Nick Giordano at the National Pork Producers Council.
Nick Giordano at NPPC is a very busy guy, no question about it. Stay tuned. We've got John Doggett, CEO of NCGA, next, right here on AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
You know I'm a dreamer. We're at NCGA down at NAFB in Kansas City, and I've got CEO John Doggett. John, it's good to talk with you again.
Good talking to you. That's a lot of acronyms.
I threw them all in there just for you.
You should have said KC instead of Kansas City.
I should have. Doggone it. You know, Davis is going to love the way this thing starts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, man, you nailed it. The op-ed that we had on agweb.com talking about this fertilizer situation. You talk about representing the concerns of your membership. You represented there, dude. Good work.
Well, thanks, but you know what? We toned it down from some of the suggestions we had early. I mean, there's certain words that most media don't allow you to use, so we took those out. But, you know, I think it was an expression of extreme frustration, the disappointment, and the deep, deep concern that farmers have about where we're going with these input costs and the fact that we have monopolies in this country that ought not to be there.
Okay. So explain this a little bit more, because you got into some of the detail on how the whole situation has kind of been set up to take us to where we are today. Take us through that.
Well, you know, Mosaic, before they went to the FTC to get tariffs put on imports of product, they were at 72.34% of the market. Now they're over 80. You know, those are numbers that are verifiable, and just take a look where their stock price has been. You know, they're making a lot of money on the backs of a lot of folks, and you know, in agriculture, farmers buy retail and sell wholesale, and they pay the freight both ways. And I think that this is a case where all of this is mounting up to a point where there's a lot of frustration, and I think we're gonna be talking to folks about taking a real good look at where this monopoly and this market domination is going.
Okay, John, when it comes to the price of fertilizers, nitrogen, in times of low prices, when lower prices, I guess I should say, and low natural gas prices, you got the traditional fertilizer analysts that are out there that'll say, well, you know what, really the connection between fertilizer prices and natural gas prices has been broken. Really, the price of fertilizer is set by what the corn grower is willing to pay for it. And I think there's a lot of it involved in what you're talking about, isn't there?
We have to, there's a lot of discussions. Where are these acres going to move? They're going to move out of corn to beans. They're going to move out of corn to wheat. Or, you know, we've got a lot of corn on corn in the Midwest. Are we going to see that broken up? I think it's going to be an interesting time the next few months as growers start to make those planting decisions. I talk to the seed guys all the time, and they're scratching their heads too. They don't know where it's going, and who does.
Right. Number one concern is not only price, but availability. Are you doing anything as an organization looking at the making sure that the product that the producers need for 2022 is going to be there?
Well, you know what? We are very dependent on a lot of imported inputs.
Yeah.
And COVID hit a lot of countries a lot harder than this country got hit. There's a lot of things that are just shut down. And, you know, it's everything from a shirt to glyphosate to chips for a computer to, I mean, my old Carhartt jacket finally got lost for good, and I went to get a new Carhartt jacket. Do you know how hard it is to get a new Carhartt jacket?
No, mine lasts forever.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'd wear mine another 30 years, but you know what? It somehow... I think there's a guy in his 30s whose last name is Doggett who might be wearing one.
Love it, yep. Yeah. But it's affecting everything.
It's affecting everything, and, yeah. and we're all struggling with it. And, you know, and we talked to the input providers. We've been talking to Syngenta and Bayer and Corteva and everybody else. They're all struggling. They're all struggling with how do we meet this demand in a timely way. What needs to happen in this discussion, Chip, is we need to have a discussion about the resiliency of our supply chains, both inputs and outputs. And we have to have that discussion. And you know what? It's going to cost us some money.
Yeah.
But we need to make that investment. We need to invest more into the infrastructure of supply, infrastructure of demand.
Okay. Switch gears on you. What do you make of some of the decisions at EPA on some of the crop protection products that your membership uses?
We're frustrated. You know, it's more of the same from EPA. You know, we just keep coming back to the same discussion over and over and over and over again. Now, you know, more increasingly we're having the Endangered Species Act pop in front of this thing, and you know, that's something that the activist community have seized on, and they're using it to great effect. And for the average American out there, they think of the Endangered Species Act, they think of bald eagles and you know, other charismatic megafauna, and it's not. It's affecting our ability to produce food.
Right. Yeah, we can't do that. No question about it. What else you got at the top of the list or on the list that the membership wants you to deal with?
I think one of the things members want is they want us to meet face-to-face, and we're doing a lot more of that.
Good.
I'm traveling a lot. Our officer team is traveling a lot. Our staff is traveling a lot. It's good to get out and talk to people. Thank God we had Zoom. You know, what would we have done if we had not had Zoom?
Yeah.
If our technology was 10 years behind what it is right now, it allowed us to do a lot of things. And it's going to, you know what, it's going to be an integral part of our, the way we do business. We have found in some of the surveys and other things we've done is that younger growers, women farmers want to use that because they can't be away from home 3-4 days at a time. So we're using a lot more of that, but we're really, you know, we're also going to be doing that traditional face-to-face, belly-to-belly, having those conversations in the hallway that are really important part of doing business.
Fantastic. Keep it up, buddy.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. That's John Doggett, CEO of the National Corn Growers Association.
You know, Davis, hearing John Doggett talk about the fertilizer situation is one thing, but you should have seen the look on his face as he was talking about it.
Oh, yeah, it was a scathing op-ed on agweb.com.
Oh, it certainly was, and it's got a lot of attention out there in the fertilizer industry, and it's something that we're going to deal with going forward. Hey, thanks for listening on this Thanksgiving morning. Come back this afternoon, 2:06 Central, for more AgriTalk.